You know, here we are. We're at that front edge of our Christmas celebration. I mean, you got your place all jazzed out here, you know, and I saw all the things coming down the pike, all sorts of things going on that you can get involved in, and it really is. It's an exciting time, and it should be. It should be a time that captures us, stirs our soul. And we hear once again those stories that by now, probably for everyone in this room, they've become very familiar, right? I mean, you've heard them. Maybe even when you were younger, you acted them out, you know, and you were part of all. I mean, and so you've heard these over. And part of the challenge, I think, when we come to this time of year, is to hear stories with fresh eyes and ears, and not just have them become something that is has become old and kind of just blows by us. To look into them and discover perhaps new insights we've seen before. And you know, the farther we go down the road, the more challenge there is to that. And so, you know, I've seen them a bunch of times, heard them, and so part of my challenge was to go into the stories again and to look for new things, to see with new eyes what was there. And one of the places I've gone is into the stories that have to do with Mary. And that's where I want to take you to today. I'd share with you a little bit of what I'm finding this time around as I go into those. And those are going to be found in Luke. So if you want some time to kind of, you know, get there, this would be that. Now with that, let me start with something here. I heard about this real talk show thing that happened here just very recently, where the talk show host, it was like an hour long, maybe it was longer than that, but at least an hour long talk show thing. And you know, the way a lot of these work, toss a question out and invite people to call in. Right? I mean, I don't listen to them enough to know, but that's supposed to have it. This day, this talk show host threw out this question and invited people to call in. The question was this: is life turning out for you the way you thought it would? Pretty good question, huh? Is life turning out for you the way you thought it would? Now think for a moment. Don't just say, okay, that's interesting. Ask yourself that question for a moment here. Okay? Is life turning out for you the way you thought it would? Answer. I mean, don't keep the poker face on. I don't want you to have to commit yourself, but I do want you to think about it. Is it turning out the way you thought it would? That's what happened. This is the interesting thing. For the first half of this radio broadcast, every single person that called in said yes. Isn't that interesting? They all called in and said, yeah, it is. It had to do with, you know, yeah, you know, I'm achieving my educational goals that I've got out there, my occupational goals, and I've met the love of my life, and you know, I've got my new car, whatever that was, Prius or whatever, and you know that, you know, it's working. Now the host of this talk show, after about a half hour of this or so, realized what was happening here. There was a certain thing that was going on. That everyone that called in was pretty young. I'm not sure how he described young, but they were young. And so he kind of did his own little test thing. He said, okay, let's try something else. Okay, here's new rules. For the rest of the show, only people who are over 50 can call in. And I figured 50 was a good cutoff point, okay? Because if someone's lived that long, they've had enough life experience for things to kind of play out a bit farther. So I said, only 50 or older can call in. For the rest of the show, 100% of the people who called in answered that question, life turning out for you the way you thought it would, with the answer, no. Isn't that interesting? No. Because now life had played out farther. And, those who had said, I found the love of my life, were now saying, I never dreamed that I would be divorced. Those who had started out with, everything in life was running for them, had now encountered cancer, or had a business fail on them, or had some kind. And it wasn't all just even all bad stuff. It was just life was different. For some, I thought it was going to go down this road, and I'm finding myself way over here, and it's in a different world altogether. Now, even in asking that question, probably if I was to actually, I did this a week ago. I was in a church, and I asked the question, and people just answered. I wasn't expecting that. That's why I kind of stopped you. You don't have to commit yourself, But some people actually answered out loud, and others, whenever I said, is life turning out for you the way you thought it would? And I'd have some people, I looked out there and some were going, oh, no. I was like, I wonder what that story's about, and it wasn't even just the older, over 50s. I mean, there were some that just, you could just see them, the wheels turning in their head and thinking, I never thought I would be here at this place in life. Now, here's an interesting thing. I took that question and I thought in terms of I wonder what Mary would have answered to that question. I wonder what her answer would have been at 15. Probably would have said, yes. Have you seen Joseph? Wow. Okay, life is turning out good. Okay. I wonder what she would have answered if you asked her at age 50. Is life turning out for you the way you thought it would? She would have had a different story. Wow. Now, as I've done my kind of revisiting of some things, that question is very possibly one that was asked of her. Because in the account that we have in the Bible that was written by Luke, Luke was one that didn't see any of this stuff firsthand. Luke's account is built off of interviews. He actually went back and found the people and asked them, tell me about this thing. Okay, and tell me what happened here, and tell me what happened here. And so what we have in the Gospel according to Luke is Luke's kind of putting together of his interview with Mary as he sat down with her and asked her, tell me your story. And perhaps in the midst of that might have even asked, did it turn out the way you thought it would? Maybe he didn't even have to ask that question as he heard it. So now you found your place to Luke, because I don't hear any more pages turn. I love your Bible. Isn't this good? Some of you, your Bibles are too clean. Okay. So, as you get into this, though, and you read through this, I don't even need to read through a lot of this. Okay, right? It's in Luke chapter 1. And where we're going to kind of engage the story and move forward starts in verse 26. And you can kind of be reading it and skimming it again as we talk through some of these pieces here. But part of why I don't even think I need to do that is you hear it over and over again. We sing about it. We sing these portions of the scripture out. You hear them. If you still don't get it, we kind of reduce it down to the level that you can by having little kids come in front of us and play it out for you. So you get it, and you hear it, okay, yeah. Okay, but as I looked through it, there are different movements to the story here. And as I looked at it this time, I looked at it from the standpoint of Mary's spiritual journey from her story into God's story. Work with me on this, okay? Mary's journey from her story into God's story. And the first part of it comes from that part that, again, is very familiar to you. When the angel comes, the messenger comes, that one by the name of Gabriel comes and speaks to her as a young girl. Don't know her age, but it was probably somewhere between 13 to 16. And that's how young she is when this angel comes and speaks this to her. In the first part of the story there, that account with the angel and the messenger, we read that and we go, and Mary's response, and we're all into this. But think for a moment of what's happening here. Up until that moment, Mary had her life in her picture all laid out. It's going to be great. I'm here, and my family loves me. I've got this man that loves me, and we're going to get married, and we're going to have a whole slug of kids, and life is going to be good. We're going to retire along the Sea of Galilee somewhere. I don't know. That's her story. Somehow she's got the picture in her mind, like all of us do. And then the messenger comes and says, here's what life is going to be for you. And God calls her out of her story into his story. And if you read this and you look at it, this is not just a story that has kind of the Christian ambiance to it, where we kind of go, oh, isn't that wonderful? I'm sure in Mary's mind, she's thinking this thing through. And part of what comes into her mind is just a piece of it. She didn't have any idea how big this is going to go or what all is going to play out in the future, but some pieces to this thing that probably from the very beginning scared her, because this is a different story. This is not the story that she had. And God calls her out of her story into his story. Same way God does for all of us. Calls us out of our story into his. The one that we pictured, the way we want life to go, the one that we have all lined out here, the one that, like on the talk show thing, we say, yeah, things are going. And God says, no, I'm calling you out of your story. The one that you have designed for you, and I'm going to put you into a story like you never dreamed. Step one. But as you read that, you come to that point, and by the time she hears this, you can tell as you read through it, she's kind of getting it. She realizes that this has got something to it. And you almost get the feel that by the time that first part plays out, that what she's looking for is kind of like in the advertisement. What is it, Southwest Airlines? Want to get away? it's like, and God gives her the out and refers to her relative, her aunt, Elizabeth, and says she has another piece of the story. And so she goes. And that actually moves us to the next part. Because in her journey out of her story into God's, it starts by having God call her out of hers into his, by having her story become God's story. But then God's story now becomes our story. In other words, it's put into the context of other people, others who have experienced God's work, miraculous things in their life. And God takes Mary and brings her to Elizabeth. And now her story takes on a larger proportion. It's put into the context of something else that's going on. And God does the same thing with us. Takes us and puts us into the context of other believers here. And our story becomes part of something else that's going on. And there, both Mary and Elizabeth are allowed to see something bigger going on here. How their piece fits into something else that's going on. Our story becoming God's story becoming our story. But then the place I really want to land this morning is in the next part, where God's story, our story, becomes personalized. For Mary, it became Mary's story. And in this part of it, it's part of what is actually a poem or a song. Found in chapter 1, starting in verse 46. Okay, so we've moved from that first part where God calls her out of her story, and through the part where she connects her piece of the part or of the story with Elizabeth, and then now to the part where it becomes personalized. And it's, I think, appropriate that at this point it becomes poetic rather than simply prose, simply an account of the story, but it actually becomes a poem or a song at this point, as she personalizes it. And here, as you look into this, I want to see if you see the same thing I do here as you go through this song and see some pieces of how we ourselves can have God's story really become our story. He's called us out of our own. He's put us in the context of others. But now the piece that really makes it work is when it becomes personalized and God's story genuinely becomes our story. We put ourselves in the midst of it. Some things that I think are keys here, some insights. First one, as you look at the song here, is that finding ourselves in the midst of the story is one where it's a matter of... Okay, so you can see how fresh this is. I'm still thinking it through with me. It's finding that it's not about me, it's about him. Now that's too trivialized. It's not who I am, it's who he is. It's allowing him to become the central figure in the story. There are a couple of words here, several actually, that play to that in these first verses. In verse 46, it says that Mary says or sings this. It says, "My soul exalts the Lord." That word exalt is a word that means to make something bigger. Now, obviously, we don't make God bigger, right? I mean, we don't do that. But rather, it's this idea that as she looks at God, she allows him to take this ever bigger place in the midst of the story. She allows God to become bigger in her own eyes. She magnifies him. When you think of what happens when we magnify something, it's, you know, if you hold a magnifying glass over something like this, it's not that the page becomes bigger, but rather we see more detail in it. It kind of opens up for us and we see more detail. And that's the idea behind it. She's looking and God's taking a bigger part of the picture here. He's becoming the central figure and she's seeing more detail of him. She's really looking more intently at God. Now, there's a couple ways you can do that, okay? That are kind of the typical thing. One is what you might call the binocular approach. Okay, where we stay distant from God, but we look through the binoculars. Okay, kind of into the scriptures, get the detail, and say, okay, there's more about God. Got it, okay? Note that. God is great. Okay, but we stay distant from him. Okay, so there's no emotional connection, there's no real relational thing going on here. The other approach, the one I believe God is calling us to, the one that I think makes more sense in the scriptures, is one that, for the sake of my own story, I'll call it the Shasta approach. There's a reason for that. Okay, Mount Shasta. Okay, we used to live in Oregon years ago when our kids were little, and at various times of year we'd make our way down to Santa Cruz where a lot of our relatives are, and so we'd. With little kids, we kind of, that can be kind of an adventure when you take kids on a longer drive like that. And so we would tend to leave like in the middle of the night and drive through the night. Now, this was before a lot of child safety things became the thing to do. And so we had a station wagon. Okay, remember those? And what we would do, we put the seats down in the back and make a big bed area, and then, we'd wait until our kids were sound asleep in the middle of the night, and then we would bring them out there. And our kids, they pretend they were asleep all the way through this. And then as soon as we get on the road, and you'd see them peeking up back over the, are we on the road now, Go to sleep, Okay, but as we would come down, we'd time it so that really, it'd be like sunrise and stuff like that with Shasta, okay? And when you first are coming down, you're way off in Shasta. You come over one of these rises, you know, and you can see Shasta. Shasta's about this big at that point. Okay? And it's out there in the distance. And then you go down through a bunch of, and you come over another rise, and now Shasta's this big. Okay? Now, obviously, Shasta's not getting bigger, right? Okay? And then you go down through, and pretty soon you come out of this place, and now Shasta, I mean, you have to kind of do this to even see all of Shasta, because now it's huge, okay? Because what's happening is you're getting closer and closer and closer to this, and you're seeing more detail, and it's taking up the whole view now. Now you look out, and all you and that's the idea, getting closer and closer, drawing ourselves closer to God so that He takes up more of the picture and we see more of the detail in it, and not just for the sake of... That's interesting about God. But it's the other word that comes in here, the next word anyway, because it says, my soul exults in the Lord, my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. There's an emotional connection to this thing. It's the idea of rejoicing is choosing to put the emotional charge to something. Choosing to place your mind where your joy is. And in this case, it's looking at God and seeing something there and allowing yourself to be emotionally tied to this thing, connecting to it, focusing on Him, allowing Him to become the big picture in this thing. That's part of how you personalize it. But there's another in this idea. It connects the other thing to it. It says in verse 48, He has had regard for the humble state of His bondslave. That word regard, that's the one I want you to see. And I'm not sure if it's translated that way in your Bible, but you can see where it is in there. He has had regard for me. And that word regard is kind of the thing where it flips it around. At the same time that Mary is looking at God and allowing God to take up the whole picture here, she's saying that God has done the same with me. The word regard means to look intently at something and to take great interest in it. Isn't that a cool piece? Time that we're looking at God and allowing ourselves to rejoice in Him, God looks at us and does the same thing. Looks at you and says, wow. And knows the detail of who you are. And Mary goes, what a deal. You know, this is a piece of this thing. It's not who I am in this thing. It's who He is in it. It's allowing Him to become the central figure in the story and seeing myself as one who is the object of God Himself, of His love. First piece. It's not who I am. It's who He is. Second part of this thing, it's not what I do. It's what God does. It's not just allowing God to become the central figure, but as you look at what is said next in here, it's allowing God to actually become the hero of the story. Not just the central figure, but the hero of the story. Look at how she goes about this next part of the poem here. In verse 49, it says, the Mighty One has done great things for me. That's the part. And it goes on, and as she does this, she starts to recount things out of history here, and she's counting on God's reputation, what He has done, but she personalizes it. He has not just done great things, He's done great things for me. And she uses the term here, the Mighty One. El Gibor is the term, as you went back to the Old Testament scriptures. And it's a term that describes God in terms of being the hero. God the hero has done great things for me. Let me give you a picture of this here. I am a professor at Western, and one of the courses I have is a course on worship. And I'm big on the creative end of things, and I kind of press the students to do that. And at the end of this term, it just ended here a week ago, the students in the class had to do presentations. They had to do kind of worship vignettes. Okay, they didn't have an hour, they had a half hour to work with. And they had to take all the concepts that we talked about in the class and somehow make them work. Okay, I want to see it happen here. And it's always a chancy thing because that could be a real bomb. But these students, I mean, they just hit home runs. You know, they had groups they were working with. And some of the most creative, powerful things. In fact, after this was a Saturday class, after that Saturday, I didn't want to go to church on Sunday. Because I thought nothing could compare with this. I mean, this guy, it was so cool. But in the midst of one of the presentations, one of the gals share her story in this. Life had not turned out the way she had hoped it would, or the way she thought it would. This particular student has had breast cancer. And she's had surgery, and she's now in the chemo stage. I had no idea. But she, you know, they worked this into their presentation, their worship presentation, their vignette. And I mean, it was a powerful thing, you can imagine. I mean, we're all just going, you know, as this gal is being very vulnerable and sharing a very risky story with us. What was interesting was, I mean, this was the cool piece. As she talked about it, she's arranged to have all of her chemo treatments on Fridays. And then she spends the rest, she's an artist, and she spends the rest of the weekend painting. And not just painting anything. She makes a point of trying to put into her art, into this visual portrayal, what life looks like at this point, and to put God in the middle of it somehow, and to portray it in art. And as she talked about this, she had behind her, you know, it was like, what are these dimensions? Whatever that is. She had this piece of art that was covered, and as she talked about this, that I've chosen not only to see God in the midst of this, but to see Him as my hero. And she took this off. And here was this painting of life that was chaotic and painful and distorted. And in the midst of it, here was God, the hero. I mean, they could have just shut down at that point and sent us home. But she captured in that what's being spoken of here. As Mary not only sees God as the central figure, but also as the hero. And you read through this, and she calls upon all these images and statements that capture God's reputation, but personalizes them. It's not who I am, it's who He is, it's not what I do, it's what God does. And then the third part, as you come to the end of this poem, can be put in this type of thing. It's not what I bring to this, it's what He brings to it. It's not in my fullness that I discover myself in the midst of the story, it's in my emptiness. I come not with hands full of stuff to give Him. I come with empty hands. Because she says here, in verse 53, He has filled the hungry with good things. And those who think they have everything, He sends them away empty-handed. She speaks of Israel as one that God has helped. In other words, that when Israel could not do anything on her own, God is the one who shows up. It's in our emptiness and our brokenness that God fills and restores. And that's part of how we put ourselves in the story, recognizing that we have nothing, and we come with these empty hands, and God says, I want to fill those. My father-in-law, a little visual here. My father-in-law, probably 10 years ago, on one of our Thanksgiving get-togethers, we have these big family blowout things. You probably do too. And this particular year, he decided to do something fun. He brought this big jar filled with coins, big glass jar filled with coins, Not the cheesy brown ones. Silver coins. It kind of had some value to them, you know. So filled with this stuff, okay? And then he invited all the grandkids to come up. And they could dive their hand in this thing, and they could take as many coins as they could possibly lift out of there in their hand. You know, so you can imagine, particularly some of the grandkids that were getting a little bit older and kind of had a little bit of the, you know, macho-ish, boyish thing happening with them, okay? Watch how many I can get, okay? And putting that hand in and digging it down as far as they could and then trying to pull up everything without losing a coin in this thing, you know? Wow, look what I got, you know? And, you know, obviously there's not a whole lot of value in that, but for them, I mean, this is a gold mine. This is like $1 million. Okay, look what I got. But there was that idea that you come, you know, they came with this empty hand and they could take everything they could possibly pull from there. And that's the imagery that God gives. You come as hungry, you come as empty, and you can take away as much as you can possibly handle. And Murray puts this in there. There's this movement of her story that comes from her story to being God's story. It's being called out of this. It's being put into the context of the rest of the story. And then finally it's this personalizing that takes the form of a poem and a song. And within that poem song, we find some of what I believe are the insights for how we personalize the story and allow God to become not just the central figure, but also the hero and the one who fills the emptiness inside. There are a lot of questions I have about this particular song, the poem. Because I wonder if this is the way she originally said it. Now, I have a hard time thinking that, you know, Mary kind of pop this thing out at a moment's notice. Okay, hi Elizabeth. Whoa, look at what's happening! Zoom, and drops this thing out. I wonder if maybe it was something that she revisited again and again. And by the time she sits down with Luke, this is what it sounds like. I don't know. I wonder if this poem really became a song that she sang. And if so, I wonder if she sang it throughout her pregnancy. I wonder if she sang it as a lullaby to Jesus. Can you picture that? I wonder if years down the road, she sang it as a reminder of how God had called her out of her own story into his. And it perhaps became kind of a bit of an emotional way of reconnecting again and again to what God had called her into. There's actually a fourth part to this. Okay, I mentioned, okay, God calling her out, time with Elizabeth, putting it into context, this personalizing thing. But if you catch the last piece of this, verse 56, it actually has the next part of the story because it says, and then she went home. Because you see, the story is something that is lived out in the realities of life. If we were to ask you the question this morning, is life turning out for you the way you thought it would? I imagine, you know, particularly the younger ones, whatever that is, you might have a tendency to say, yeah, I think it is, so far. Not to nail that too drastically, but I can assure you, you will answer the question differently as the years go. But that doesn't have to be a traumatic thing. God actually uses those unexpected turns in life, those unexpected things that happen and places that he takes you, to actually provoke the very thing we're talking about. to move you out of your story and into His story. Because that's where He's called us to live. In that wild and dangerous story that He's called us into. One that has all the same kinds of drama to it that Mary's story had. One that was filled with uncertainty and adventure. That's the story He's called us to live. But one of the most significant pieces of that is personalizing it. Seeing God as the central figure, the hero, and the one who fills your life.